On another exciting entry of Animation Deliberation, we continue our weekly coverage of Demon Slayer's Entertainment District arc with episode 10, Never Give Up. We're going to get right into that after some ads we have no say over whatsoever. Sing along if you know the words. A 1, 2, 3, it's time for Animation Deliberation. A conversation and a celebration of our favorite action animated series. Yeah! Alright folks, welcome back to Animation Deliberation, the podcast that takes action animation and cartoons seriously, but not too seriously. And I gotta say, this week it's tough not to take it too seriously because whoo-wee, what an episode. But I'm not alone to discuss it. This week I am joined by the Animation Deliberation Demon Slayer Dream Team. Gentlemen, introduce yourselves.
I'm Zuhair. As much as I love the show, I cannot wait for... I'm really happy that next week's the last episode for the sake of my emotions.
Oh. Fair enough.
And I am Andrew Rogers, and I don't know how to process any of this. I don't want it to be over, but I also don't know how it keeps going. Like, it's everything and nothing. It's something else.
This show is a masterpiece. That's all I can say. It's a masterpiece.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Masterpiece is pretty high praise. So on that note, before we get super spoilery, it's going to be tough to withhold our thoughts for too long. So Zuhair, I'll start with you. On a scale of to yeah, where are you landing on this week's episode?
I can't even like ride on that because like the excitement of going through a I can't even like pretend to do it because it just doesn't match. like my emotions don't convey to the rating, if that makes sense. It was just a really damn good episode.
It doesn't register on the octave.
Nah.
Yeah, I have to agree with Zuhair on that. Like, if you were to take out the last 30 seconds, I would be through the roof with volume and excitement and everything else. And then things happen that obviously turn your stomach into knots and everything else. So it's like, how do I quantify this in terms of excitement versus turmoil?
Yeah, I totally get where you're coming from. This week was kind of a unique experience for me just because my brother kind of like stepped into the room as like watching alongside me. So I was explaining things to him at the same time, but he was obviously enraptured with what was going on. And I kept telling him the episode's probably going to end right here. The episode's probably going to end right here. The episode's probably going to end right here. So in that regard, I was actually extremely satisfied with the momentum of the story and some of the things that happened. But yeah, we definitely leave things off in a pretty dire situation. So the one thing I do have to plug before we get super into the episode is that we do have a review contest going on right now. I've mentioned it at the end of the last couple of episodes, but the first 5 reviews that we get on Apple Podcasts, or if you review at another place, just let us know at animationdeliberationpodcast@gmail.com or any of our social medias, the Instagram especially, and we will enter the first 5 new reviews into a drawing. The prize is a custom commissioned cartoon by yours truly. So give us some love if you like what we're doing, and I will prepare a cartoon for you.
And if you need an idea and a little portfolio of this masterpieces, check out jscotty4real on Instagram. That's 4, the number, R-E-E-L.
Thank you, sir. You flatter. I don't know if masterpieces... if I feel comfortable with that in terms of you just calling this episode a masterpiece, I'll take the praise. So thank you.
You said it yourself. It's the highest praise. It's well deserved.
Thank you. All right, fellas. Now that we've gotten the non-spoiler talk out of the way, let's just get right into it. Go ahead and gush. Who wants to go first?
I'm going to jump in, not even about the story. I'm going to talk the animation and the music in this episode were both, I think, the best that the series has ever done, including the Mugen Train movie. I think this completely outdid that scale. The fire throughout the entirety of the beginning, I think, may have been photo real. It looked very, very close to them actually like rotoscoping in real flames. So whatever animation they were doing was flawless. The entirety of the fight between Uzui and, well, I guess spoilers a little bit, Uzui's still back. That entire fight was just the most beautiful, stunning thing. I might be a little partial because I watched it on a new computer monitor, but it was just crisp everywhere. And then I've talked the past couple weeks about the music, how they've played with us kind of like our subconscious. The entirety of the opening sequence where Gitaro is like stalking Tanjiro, there's zero music. They made it so eerie and just you had this gut feeling of something's not right. Why is it quiet that entire time? The only thing you had was the sound effects of the fire and them talking. And then they brought in music for the second half of the episode, and that music just picked up and was fantastic. So they just did a really good job composition wise. We can go over the story in a moment, but I wanted to call out all of this was some of the best work that I think this studio has ever done. Possibly the best anime episode that I've seen, period, just in terms of quality.
Yeah, and just to hype on a little on the what you were talking about with the no music, I went and saw Jackass yesterday, and that level of cringe in my stomach was about the same as watching this Demon Slayer episode. Obviously, much different context, but just the level of discomfort of like what I was seeing and the vibe that it was giving was definitely on par with, you know, a bunch of idiots doing cringeworthy stuff. But that being said, like, yeah, it was so visually amazing. Mugen Train definitely did set a high bar, and I felt that this did match it, if not exceed it. There's been a lot of stuff from season one where, or even in Mugen Train, where we see a lot of landscape environments, and that was like more detailed and more photoreal than the show itself actually was. But because we've been in the entertainment district and been more in buildings and in a city life, like I think we've missed the level of detail that they truly go into that. So when they stepped into the fire and there was more nature and less of like human structure and whatnot, we kind of like put that on the shelf, and they just brought all that level of detail back out. But yeah, visually just stunning.
For sure.
Yeah, the production value was absolutely phenomenal. And that's one of the things I said to my brother when we were watching, especially I think the moment that it really kind of peaked for me in terms of like the music and the just the fluidity of the animation plus the number of colors on screen was when Uzui came back into the battle and basically broke down Gitaro's attack and turned it into a song. Just everything that was happening there was just so satisfying on every single level. And I even told my brother, I was just like, how can you not be into this anime already just seeing this level of quality? And he agreed. So.
Yeah, and that showing of his power was phenomenal. Like, this whole time we've been questioning, like, he could do cool things, we want to see more. I did not expect anything like that. And it felt a little reminiscent of Jimmy Neutron, like, brain blast moment of, like, going into, like, the neurons of his thoughts and breaking everything down. I was like, what is going on? This is amazing. And that was just another moment, I agree, of the animation. Just they took my breath away because I didn't know what was going on, but it was still a perfectly painted picture in front of me.
Certainly, certainly. Yeah. And I have to admit, I don't think I did not pick up on the, like, absence of music in the first part of the episode. And we've already got to spend a little bit of time with Gitaro and just know how creepy he is, but just having him taunt Tanjiro the way he did and even like admit to him that he liked him because of how disgraceful he was and like contemplate the idea of turning him into a demon so that they could be friends was just really riveting stuff. So
yeah, Akaza did something similar. So clearly these higher ranked demons really are, you know, working on a recruiting process for their upper levels.
True. Yeah, because they do need to find other powerful people in some regard to help their ranks, I guess. Because they lost half of the Kizuki when Muzan took them out, so they're probably like, all right, we got to replenish here a little bit if the Demon Slayer are killing as many as they're killing.
Yeah, very true. The demons want you. I'm going to, like, take an Uncle Sam poster and put, like, Muzan's face in place.
There's definitely a picture of Akaza pointing out there somewhere you can pull.
For sure.
I was trying to find like what the Japanese equivalent of Do Re Mi Fa Sol La Ti Do was, because when he was going through like tracking the blood sites, like he was actually like saying, I guess, like notes of some sort. So I was like wondering like what the equivalent was of, like, that's what he was saying, like, while he was closing the distance. But I could not find something, because I know in Hindi they have a different one too. So I was like, ooh, what is it?
Do you know the Hindi one off the top of your head?
Sare ga ma pa da ni sa.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah, I didn't even think about that, but you're probably right on the money. It was something equivalent to that, Do Re Mi Fa Sol La Ti Go or what have you. But yeah, I mean, the episode just picked up answering pretty much all the questions that we had coming off of the last episode. Was Inosuke dead? But yeah, we were wrong about everything.
I threw my arms in the air. I was so happy.
Yeah, yeah. And I did laugh a little bit at his explanation, being able to shift his organs around in his body was like second nature to him.
It was like some
that was so funny.
It was a weird Chekhov's gun. Like, how did we know they were foreshadowing that when he's like, I can move my body and dislocate joints? Like, it was good storytelling, but why?
I move my organs.
Yeah, we did see him like burrow through the like tunnels like a worm, so it's all there. It's within the continuity. It's nothing that we couldn't have guessed, but I just didn't see it coming. And he still has the poison in him. I think everyone's been poisoned at this point, except for maybe Zenitsu.
Right? Yes. Zenitsu wasn't poisoned because he was with Daki the whole time. And Inosuke, because he lived in the harsh mountain environment, poisons nothing to him.
Well, then
that was part Tanjiro of his dialogue too.
Yeah, but Tanjiro took one of the Sais like right through the chin, and that point in the moment, or that moment in the episode, I like let out an audible gasp. It was just like, holy crap,
that was disgusting.
They got brutal in this episode. Like, I don't think I felt as guttural of feelings toward a fight since Invincible. Like, this kind of gives me the similar feelings internally as that show did, of like, I need to process this. This was a lot.
Uzi was just like holding the sword in his mouth and then just showing like how capable he was moving. I was like, oh. I thought the chain was going to be a problem for him. And I guess like eventually it got cut off too, so he only has to worry about one sword now. But
yeah, and at one point it looked like he took like a scythe like directly to the head. Like, I couldn't tell how deep it went into his forehead, but it looks like it started to go into his eye.
At the end, when he was telling Tanjiro to run, his eye was gone. There was a slash through the left side of his face, and his eye was gone.
Yikes.
Yeah, and
so his left side is just demolished.
They all took some bad hits. It was, yeah, I don't know. I don't know how you walk away from that either, as calmly as he was. Like, just no eye, still keep fighting.
Well, he's flashy.
Yeah, that he is. That he is. But yeah, it was just, by the end of the episode, we do have both Gitaro and Daki beheaded. It was Tanjiro that was able to behead Gitaro, and then Zenitsu plus Inosuke took care of Daki. But just the way the story has been going so far, I just kept thinking that they're going to find a way out of this. Like, they're not both going to get beheaded by the end of this episode. And by the time that both of their heads go flying through the air and then land and roll to face each other, I was just all sorts of, hell yeah.
I still like couldn't believe it, but it was also this perfect artistic moment. Like, there was a bit of yin and yang as the heads were flying through the air. You felt like them coming together was some symbolic method, but also it was like something's wrong. What, I don't know what it is, but something else is happening.
I think I was more appealed by when they were in the air with like the moon in the background and everything, like just the beauty of just the timing of them like being cut off, especially after Zenitsu like put the emphasis of like, Tanjiro got me this one in a million opportunity, like we need to take advantage of it. But like, they still gave us a moment of it being hopeless. Like, the blade wasn't cutting through, Zenitsu couldn't get it on, his legs were getting shattered, and then the other two showed up. So it's like, that really highlighted that moment, just like seeing them fly through the air like that. It was cool how it landed together, but I guess that was a little more I don't want to say predictable, but like I saw that coming, but there was a sense of just like seeing it up in the air. It's like, oh my god, like after the last few episodes of just false hope and thinking that it got it through, it's like they're done. Like there's two heads. It's in the air. Yeah. Nothing's attaching them. We're good, right? Right? Oh, we're not? Okay. Cool.
Yeah, yeah, that's when you got Utsui saying, Kamado, like, get up. It's not over. It's not over. And at that point, when he was saying it was not over, I was like, I kind of knew what was going to happen at that point. Just, it made sense that such a despicable character would have, like, one final failsafe and just basically cause his body to implode with demon blood art. And that's how the episode ends. You see the entire city go off almost like an atomic bomb. So it's got me concerned, for everybody. I mean, I didn't think Utsui was making it out of this alive for a long time now with all the injuries he's suffered. But, I mean, all three main characters, Nezuko plus the three wives, we saw them on the rooftop not that far away. So
yeah, and Hinatsuru did not look good on that rooftop either. She was down for the count.
She did not. Yeah. Didn't Suma say, like, look beyond the grave or something like that, and then she got kind of chastised by Makio.
I was like, did she die? Like, is this how you're telling us she died?
Yeah, that was...
It sounded
like
it.
That would have been really problematic. I will say, I actually didn't know what was going on, how you kind of said you saw it coming a little bit, Scotty. When he was like, it's not over, there's more to come, like, run, I thought Muzan was about to show up. Like, I thought the big bad was around the corner. I thought we were in for somehow something worse than we got. What we got was still pretty bad, but, like, I thought we were going to have to fight a whole other demon or something like that when he started to say run.
I mean, so Gyutaro actually straight up said he was, like, while his neck was getting cut, he was like, I have to get my blood sickles out. So it's like, yeah. Oh, you just straight up told us that you were going to do that. I wasn't expecting, like, that level of it. So I was thinking that he was going to do something, that Gyutaro just wasn't done yet, but I was so locked in on Utsui saying run that, I mean, I couldn't have predicted, like, that just nuclear bomb of a blood show.
Yeah, he was basically on Extremis at that point in time. That's a Marvel reference for you. But
yeah.
I did find myself, you know, we talked about how epic this battle was from just the scale to the animation quality. It really has me wondering, like, where can the series go from here? Like, we mentioned that it kind of outdid Mugen Train, which was the theatrical release, and we know there are more upper-ranked demon out there, including Muzan himself, so, like, it just has me really fearful. I mean, obviously, the situation we left our heroes in at the end of the episode, but even going forward, like, Tanjiro got his fingers broken, a scythe through his chin. Zenitsu is the only one that did not suffer, like, grievous bodily injury. So,
I mean, he had a building fall on him and his legs are getting destroyed from that technique.
That he did. That he did.
Yeah.
And remember, like, he was knocked out and kidnapped at one point, too, so he never fully recovered from that either.
Mm.
Yeah, I don't know where they go and how they do it, but also you say, okay, what does the future of this show hold? These demons are only rank 6. Every other demon that is still out there that is a big deal is above them and more powerful than them. So they destroy, like, a whole city trying to fight off these two. What is the next thing going to look like?
We still have Akaza to deal with.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are we aware of any of the other upper ranked demons, or is Akaza the only one we know about at this point?
We've seen flashes Akaza's of them and like flashbacks and stuff, but we don't know any of them by name or by power or anything like that.
Okay. Well, one of the things I kind of wanted to backpedal to is I did appreciate, as awesome as this episode was in terms of the action and moving the story forward, I felt like we got some nice callbacks to, like, season one Demon Slayer and some things we haven't seen in a long time, including, well, I guess we saw it at the beginning of the season with Tanjiro doing his headbutt, and we got a little bit more context for that at the very end of the episode. But the whole sequence where we kind of thought Tanjiro was kind of sniveling and running away and whatnot, when Gitara realized the strategy that he was employing in order to get that kunai in him to get that first beheading opportunity, it reminded me almost all the way back to, like, the first couple of episodes of Demon Slayer where, help me with the water Hashira again, Tomioka?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, when he acknowledged the strategy that Tanjiro employed by distracting him, I was just really satisfied with that stuff.
It really showed his ingenuity in that moment, because I was surprised that Tanjiro was really running away like this. Like, I could totally see it being a very real thing to do when you're in that much fear with no energy. It's like, you kind of have to protect yourself and your sister, but to know the whole time he was still being the honorable Tanjiro that we know, coming up with a clever plan, distracting him with the things on the ground, like, it was very, very well done, to the point that you had the audience convinced that either could be true. Like, I didn't doubt the actions at either point.
Yeah, when it went in for the headbutt, like, I was concerned for a moment, because I was like, there's no way he's getting out of this with just a headbutt. Like, what? I was worried about, like, what the writers were thinking of in that moment. And then when they added the kunai, and then also the detail of, like, he was able to go toe-to-toe with Gyutaro after the beheading didn't work because the poison hadn't fully come out yet. I was like, cool, because now we could see some slow, like, the fast stuff is really cool. They make it look really nice with Uzui and Gyutaro, but when it was slowed down and it was Tanjiro holding his own against him, like, that looked really nice. And from, like, familiarity of, like, training with, like, stick and sword and stuff, like, these three fingers are kind of all you need. The ring, pinky, and thumb. So the fact that he broke the other two, in my head, I was like, hey, he still holds a sword just fine. So the fact that I was right on that, and he was just using those three, I was like, cool.
That's actually a really nice note, because I was like, how can you fight? I assumed it was because he still had that sword strapped to his hand was the only reason he could actually really hold it. But to know that they took the time to kind of get the realism there, how do you choreograph that in a manga or anime? Like, that's so much dedication to the storytelling.
Yeah, I don't have a stick, like, within reach without having to take my headphones off, but basically it's like your bottom two fingers are what's, like, holding it in place, and the first two is just kind of like it rocks between there for, like, flexibility. So it's just kind of like your index and middle finger are just kind of like for motion, while the bottom two are like what's keeping it stable. And then you just, like, tighten down as need be. But in terms of, like, holding your blade, those three fingers, like, on a gun is just all you need.
It's an impressive level of detail, and it clearly shows that just the dedication and the research that's gone into every single frame of the show. But seeing those fingers snap back and turning, like, black and then purple definitely gave me some My Hero Academia vibes. Just, you know, Izuku Midoriya constantly breaking his fingers at the beginning of that show.
I question how you heal that, though. Just for, like, they talk about them having to, like, recoup injuries. Can you really come back from your fingers being shattered to that degree?
Just tape them together. He'll be fine.
Yeah. I guess that in conjunction with, like, the breathing techniques, maybe they have a way of, like, delivering more specific calcium and nutrients to that area of the body, maybe. That's my headcanon.
Yeah, they don't have the convenience of My Hero of having a nurse that can just kiss it and actually make it better. But I do appreciate that they go into the detail of saying, like, hey, we've been in recovery for, like, 6 months to a year. It's not like they're just magically better all the time.
Yeah, and I guess I didn't ask the question, but in my head I was asking the question of, like, do we think he's going to keep those fingers or not? Like, if they can't heal, are they just going to just kind of get rid of them, or... And now he's going to be handicapped in some fighting regard, and it's going to play better into the story? I don't know.
Now they'll be popped back in and, like, taped at the least.
Yeah, that's, for whatever reason, that's making me think of other parts of the episode and some things we had never seen before. And I was kind of imagining if he did lose those fingers when he goes, like, full power mode, like, we saw his scar transform into a flame and it looked like his hair kind of, like, lit on fire as well.
He went Super Saiyan.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just kind of imagining two flame fingers kind of appearing and replacing those missing fingers, but I do think they'll probably heal properly.
Super Slayerin?
Nice. Now that is an edit that I would definitely look to see someone do some art of, for sure. No, that whole transformation was really interesting. Like, is his scar going to now permanently be bigger? Because we've seen it change over the course of the show. Or is it just going to be a thing that, like, we know he's getting angry because he goes, you know, a little Hulk and his scar transforms and stuff?
I mean, it'd be cool if he just went so hard that he burned more of his head.
That's kind of my expectation, but I could really see it going either way. Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone loves a good transformation.
Well, at this point, I don't know if I have too much more to say. Actually, you know, I am thinking about some of the quieter moments. Like, it was nice to not have the action interrupted at all with Tanjiro doing too much monologuing, which I know you appreciated, Zuhair. But yeah, the quiet moments that we did get, Nezuko kind of stepped up, and it was really nice to be able to hear that voice actress do a little bit more than her just kind of mewing and squeaking and whatnot.
Grunting.
Yeah.
Yeah, she played a good little sister there. Like, it was a nice little in the feels kind of conversation.
Sorry, I like that it wasn't that he was like just hallucinating and she was talking to him. Like, it actually was conversations from his past that was like connecting with him.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that added a whole like level of like power to the essence of that too. Because if it was just like, Tanjiro, get up, like, it wouldn't be the same, as opposed to like the flashback and the recollection of like his relationship with his sister that actually powered him through.
Yeah, exactly. I agree. It just gave so much more context to their past and their relationship. And that's actually where the episode opened. We talked about how last week it was just Tanjiro falling and saying, sorry, sorry, everyone, sorry, Nezuko. And then we open with this flashback and she's like, why are you always apologizing? Why do you think there's always someone to blame? And it was just a really good message. Learning to be happy and knowing that your happiness is your own control is something that you kind of have to learn day by day. And it's easier in some moments than others, but it's a really good message. And the fact that it did come from his little sister is pretty awesome, because we talk about how honorable Tanjiro is, and he kind of seems without fault sometimes, which makes him a little difficult to relate to, but just having that acknowledgement, I found incredibly satisfying, and it was great to get it from Nezuko.
Yeah, it's a real good embodiment of a brother-sister relationship. I have a younger sister, and I just kind of had that feeling of like, this is how you teach each other. This is the way that siblings really interact and show like, hey, I'm going to help you, but you have to help yourself too. It was just a really nice message, like you said.
Definitely.
And in hindsight, you know, thinking about Gyutaro was like criticizing Tanjiro for not being a good big brother, because like, you're supposed to protect your mm-hmm. little sister and this and that. But now you understand it's like the full dynamic is actually that it is a give and take between them.
Yeah. And any sibling will tell you, as much as, you know, the older one's going to take care of the younger one, chances are the younger one is probably taking care of the older one more times than they can actually count, because they're just relying on each other. They're helping each other. And it's just how siblings are and how that love actually goes. It's not one-sided. It's not always going to be that, you know, there is the protective element, but you still have that back and forth for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's making me think, do we have an age for Nezuko? Is she like 14? If Tanjiro's like 16?
I think it was like 15 and 13 or something. You were pretty close with the actual gap.
Okay.
But I will say, as we're on the topic of siblings and the really nice story,
She was 12 when she became a demon.
12.
Okay. Oh, wow. Okay.
The parallel that they had of that moment where Tanjiro realized we both could have been demons, this could have been me and Nezuko together, was a really powerful revelation for him to be able to have. Like, it was kind of a conversation about fate and, you know, what is your destiny? Things could go a different way. Like, these people in a very, very different situation from you really aren't that far off of what you could be. Like, even though he obviously hates these demons, even though Gyutaro is obviously a menace and a terrible being, he still kind of had that moment where he seemed to care a little bit and was like, do I really need to do this? This could have been me. Like, I could have been on the other end of this sword. What would that have been like? Was, again, powerful. And they didn't really necessarily need to do that, because it didn't add anything to the fight. He didn't pull his punches because he realized it could have been him, but it still was this amazingly moving scene just to show you the emotion of the character.
And he just watched Rengoku go down by not turning into a demon as well. So it's like, he just knowing that as a character, like, he wouldn't have done that. That would have been such disrespect to like what he feels towards Rengoku and like what he learned from him to be able to do something like that.
Yeah, certainly. I did find myself like wondering, like, if they were both demons, what an absolute terrible force of destruction they would be. I think they would probably outdo Gyutaro and Daki. But it does, it encapsulates Tanjiro's empathy and his ability to relate to these demons. Like, he still recognizes the fact that they were humans at one point in time. So I was a little surprised when we got the beheading and their faces like faced each other that we didn't get that flashback to see how they became demons. But I imagine that's probably how the next episode will probably open, or we'll get that pretty quickly after, you know, discovering the fates of all our characters. But I don't know if I have anything else to say about this episode. So if you guys have any speculation or predictions for the future, I welcome you to tackle that now.
I don't think I have any speculation. I don't think we paid justice necessarily. So I'm going to bring back up that ending scene was just another perfect rendition of them playing with music. The fact that we did not cut to our usual outro, because I expected them to almost do the explosion and then cut to outro, just so you're sitting there wondering what happened. Instead, they did the explosion. You got to see it go off, and I'm like, okay, the outro will cut soon. And no, you're just staring as this beautiful smoke appears in the distance, and you can see the embers start to fall. No music, just the credits overlaying it. We didn't get our usual. It was just, they let you, I want to say, like, sit there with your mistakes, because obviously we did nothing wrong, but they really let you sit there and mull over what happened internally. And this is not the first show to do that, where they fake you out with the credits like that, but it's just so well done. And the fact that they know when and where to place that is, it was perfect, and it was a beautiful scene, no matter how heartbreaking it was to watch.
Yeah, it's clever because you're watching the fire like just go out and everything too, and it's like, hello, like, somebody scream or stand up or like give me some indication of what happened to these four. Come on. Five.
Yeah, that was great how you had like the initial afterglow from the explosion kind of like slowly subside. So by the time the credits are over, it's almost entirely dark except for the little embers here and there providing a little bit of glow. Yeah, it reminded me a little bit of Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, the way that movie ended. You just have, you know, Indiana, his father, and Sala all riding off into the sunset, and it never really fades to black. You just watch them go further and further and further off into the sunset.
Yeah, I really don't know the fate of our characters, though. I think that's going to be the biggest question. And did either of you stick around after the credits hoping that we would get a post-credit scene? Because...
I didn't expect to, given the dark ending there, but I was pleasantly surprised that we got
it. It did make me laugh, though. I will say that much. They definitely took the weight off a little bit, because it was still the dark, like, Tanjiro's dying. What's going to happen? And then Nezuko pops up. We'll find out next week. For now, you want to learn about headbutts?
Yeah. I'm actually glad you mentioned that, too, because I would be remiss if we didn't discuss that revelation about the headbutt. I was genuinely surprised to learn that he got his hard head from his mother as opposed to his father.
Yeah, I don't know if there's anything necessarily to read into that, but I love the imagery of her headbutting Inosuke pretending to be a boar. Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. Good stuff.
I found a chart that has everyone's age and birthdays and their height.
Oh.
All right. Run through it real quickly for us, if you will.
I'm going to throw out Rengoku first, because not only did he die at 20, but he has my birthday of May 10th.
Oh, cool.
And he's 5'10". Which makes...
Shorter Tengen, than I expected.
Yeah, Tengen is 23 with a Halloween birthday of October 31st, and he's 6'6".
Okay, I knew he was tall, but...
Is anybody else 6'6"? Hime Jima, who's that?
That could be coming from the manga, so don't read too far into some of those names, I'm sure.
It's really cool. Like, it is just like quick bios on everybody. Like, nothing spoilerly on here.
Okay.
There's somebody who's like 7-something.
Well, if I remember, I'll try and link it somewhere on one of the socials so that people can take a look at that themselves.
Yeah.
Daki and Gyutaro are 13 years apart, Daki being 113 years old and Gyutaro being 126.
Interesting. Okay. So I'm guessing they were probably like 13 and 26 when they were turned or something along those lines, and it's been 100 years, if I had to hazard a guess. While we're on the topic of looking things up, I also found the quick answer to what the words that Uzui was saying when he broke down the score. Wow. Those are actually just numbers. I believe it was 1-3. I don't know if it was 1-3-5-7 or 1-3-7-5. But basically he was just counting through. So I'm guessing it was something along the lines of what you were talking about, Zuhair, of he was either counting beats or counting notes on the scale. It could be something along those lines. But yes, those are numbers in Japanese.
Yeah, maybe like a time signature is what it sounds like to me.
Oh yeah, it could be something along those lines.
Yeah.
So Giyome Himejima is the really big one, the one that's always crying and praying. He's 27, his birthday is August 23rd, and he is 7'2".
Whoa.
Big boy.
Yeah. Gyu Tomioka was apparently 19 when we first met him. He's 21 by episode 15.
Okay.
And then Tanjiro was 13 when we met him. He's 15 now, with Nezuko being 12 when we met her, and 14 now.
Okay.
But she doesn't really age, so.
Yeah.
And Zenitsu's 16, Inosuke's 15. So Zenitsu's the oldest one of the crew.
You know, I do think I knew that, because that was kind of, I think they poked fun at that at one point. Like, you were the oldest, why are you the, like, sniveling hide behind us of the group?
That's so crazy that this whole crew is just, like, everybody's, like, early in college dealing with high schoolers.
Yeah, it's a young dynamic when, like, we think about them as adults, and that's not the case for them to be literally saving the world.
Makes me feel that much more unaccomplished.
Just kidding. Oh, jeez. I wonder, is that a little bit of why, like, the general public does not take the Demon Slayer core seriously? Like, obviously, most of them don't know about it, but even when they see them, they're like, why is this person running around with a sword? Like, do you think it's because they just look at a bunch of, you know, 16 to 20-year-olds running around being like, what are you doing? Why are you like this? Like,
I mean, you would think the destruction of a whole district would be, like, incentive enough to, like, recognize a demon core to a higher level.
Yeah, actually.
Maybe start a recruiting process for them? I don't know. Yeah,
actually, this did remind me of a question that I completely forgot about, is, does this happen every time that they fight a Hashira? Like, you can't tell me none of the others were also not giving up a fight like this. So, how is this much destruction going on? And it's like we said, the first time that it's really being noticed that the Demon Slayer core isn't public knowledge, if they're probably doing decent damage to property every single time.
Yeah, it makes me wonder if there's like one of the upper ranked demon has some like ability to maybe like hypnotize the public or impact their memory or something like that, or maybe one of the Hashira may do it just to keep the
It could have been
mania.
It could have been Enmu, actually, because just put people to sleep while they're fighting a Hashira so that no one is actually like paying attention to what's going on, so they can tear up the town and do what they need to. But now they don't have Enmu, so perhaps we're kind of right and people will notice now because they can't do a little Men in Black and memory wipe everybody.
Yeah, good reference.
Sorry, last interesting thing. I was watching The Last Samurai last night just because I hadn't seen it in so long, and like, it kind of made the timeline kind of match up, because we talk about this being in like the early 1900s, and The Last Samurai was like 1877. Mm-hmm. So this is the fall of the samurai, General Custard's last stand, and then, you know, there was like dialogue about the emperor talking about how we're like transitioning to the West and updating our stuff, and they're talking about like these nice guns and big guns, stuff like that. So I thought it was, like, while I was watching Last Samurai, I was thinking about the fact that I was watching Demon Slayer today, and that, I don't know, that the whole, like, timeline stuff that we were talking about just kind of makes sense by why things look the way they do.
Yeah, I'm pretty confident that this story is going to take place on the side of the world that it currently is, but it just kind of made me have a little chuckle imagining, like, a Teddy Roosevelt demon just being like,
that sounds like an amazing spin-off show, like the cowboy demon slayers that are currently operating on the other side of the world.
That'd be pretty cool. I like it. All right, well, it sounds like we're towards the end of the episode here, so I will open up the floor for you guys to let the people know what you have going on.
Yeah, so I got to a guest on a podcast called The 323 with Reed Murphy. That's R-E-I-D. We talked about the Washington football team now being the Washington Commanders. So just kind of like our ups and downs about all that, what the team means to us, stuff in the NFL. But we also talked a lot about animation too, some of his favorite shows. He put me on the spot and asked me about my favorite superhero adaptations that have been put into comic book form. So if you want to know the answer to that, go check it out on anywhere you find your podcast.
What's the name of the podcast one more time for the folks?
The 323 with Reed Murphy.
Very cool. Andrew, what do you want to let the people know about?
As per usual, just follow us on our social medias. I'm taking care of that. And starting to toy around with some new stuff, so you'll be able to hear little snippets of the podcast. Maybe send those off to your friends to intrigue them and be like, hey, this is what I actually listen to. This is what people talk about. So, yeah, keep following us there. And that's all I got for this week.
Yeah, a very valiant effort there. I'm really impressed with some of the things you're doing, so that's exciting. Definitely give us a like and a follow on our social medias. For myself, I will just remind everyone about that review contest. The first 5 reviews we get on Apple Podcast, or if you review otherwise, let us know. You'll be entered into a drawing to get a custom commission cartoon of your choosing. Other than that, I did appear on Pandavision for Peacemaker with Matthew Carroll, and it sounds like I'm going to try and join them going forward every episode so far. So if you like James Gunn's Suicide Squad, this show is on HBO Max and it is absolutely hilarious. I can't recommend it enough. So check out Pandavision. And on that note, I will say keep tuning in. That's TOONIN.
Till next week, muscle, muscle.
Stay whelmed. Thank you for listening to the Animation Deliberation Podcast, a proud member of the Stranded Panda Network. If you would like to contact us, you can email animationdeliberationpodcast@gmail.com or follow us on Twitter at @animationdelib1. For this and other great shows, you can visit strandedpanda.com or join the great community that is the Stranded Panda Chat Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/svchat. Tune in next time, and remember, stay whelmed.